I'm working on pages 216 through 218 of Jeffrey Eugenides' Middlesex. One thing I like about this passage is how it shows Eugenides' propensity to tell a story from the beginning and the end at the same time until it meets in the middle. At this point in the story, Callie's been speaking from this kind of vague prenatal limbo, but also from the point of view of Cal, her adult self. Her birth here marks simultaneously the convergence and the weakening of both of these narrative voices at the moment at which she becomes an active participant in the world of the story. She tells us at one point, "From here on in, everything I'll tell you is colored by the subjective experience of being part of events." This seems in some ways to be the beginning of Calliope's story. It's her birth, after all, but since it doesn't fall until roughly the middle of the book, it reflects the way that Eugenides' storytelling supposes a much more far-reaching concept of fate. It goes beyond individual agency to incorporate history and genetics, as well as personal choice. Later on, he tells us, in the 20th century, genetics brought the ancient Greek notion of fate into our very cells. Another thing that interested me in this passage, which relates to the idea of genetic fate, was its demonstration of the ways that Calliope's life is tied to that of her grandparents, even more so than it is to her parents' lives. It seems like the story of her grandparents and their kind of unique relationship, both fraternal and romantic, foreshadows, or even in some fatalistic way, as well as a genetic way, forms the uniqueness and the doubleness of Calliope's own relation to the world. Just as Desdemona and Lefty's relationship is powerful but ambiguous, Calliope's relation, both to those she or he loves and to him or herself, is complicated by her ability to identify with both sexes. The object, for example, is both a friend, a kind of sister figure, and an object of sexual desire. Calliope's suspension between the sexes seems to allow her to relate to both and to see neither as the other, in the way that we'd think of the classically sexualized other. Later in the story, Zora, her companion from the sex club, tells her, "Everybody's always searching for their other half, except for us. We've got both halves already." And it's interesting to reflect on how this plays out in Calliope's love life. In the next part of the passage, Cal talks about the oversimplification of emotion. I think this discussion relates to his more general objection to categorization in this passage. Just as gender is oversimplified, so is emotion. We might even extend Cal's need for nuanced language to Lefty and Desdemona, who begin the passage. In some ways, what Desdemona and Lefty need is a word for the love of a brother and sister who become romantically involved. The idea of a word in general language to express a precise emotion seems important because it suggests that general social acceptance of that emotion. In Desdemona and Lefty's case, their love is something that could never be socially accepted and as such can never be linguistically expressed. Similarly, many of Cal or Callie's emotions are difficult to articulate for fear of social judgment, such as Callie's love for the object early on. Within this context, Lefty's discovery at the end of this paragraph that he's lucid, able to think and remember, but unable to speak and express himself is horrifyingly appropriate to Cal's discourse in this passage. The last part of the passage features Cal's meditation on his own infant beauty, here with his unsettling description of baby Calliope's face piece by piece. Cal gestures towards later objectification of his body. "Can you see me, all of me?" he says. "No one ever really has." I think this theme of objectification is one of the most significant things about this passage and about the novel. One of the things I find intriguing about the passage is its kind of theatrical language, the emotional exhibitionism that leads him to develop those Germanic train car constructions of emotion and to talk about his baby face in this way. On rereading, I think that this theatricality is more than just Eugenides or Cal enjoying the chance to give us some clever rhetoric. It's actually like a pastiche of the way that Cal treats himself throughout the novel. Whether he's ashamed of his body in high school or strangely proud of it in the kind of desperate display that goes on at the sex club, Cal's sense of his own gender is affected and complicated by his perception of how others perceive him. And we, as readers, are conscious of and complicit in this perception. Throughout the novel, we're continually asked to try to create an image of Cal that partakes of his own self-conscious observation and his attempts at objectivity. And like Cal, we both identify with and are forced to objectify the characters that we see.